Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Mullen, joined by Craig Mauger, Emily Lawler, and Jacob Kanzler. A little later, we're interviewing Warren Evans, candidate for the Wayne County executive spot, a leading candidate from what I can tell so far, according to the polls. He's doing very well. We've got a lot of questions that we have to ask him. But first, Craig, one of the stories that we did last week, I think, that still needs, I think, a bit of commentary, the debate commission story that you wrote, and the fact that Michigan obviously doesn't have one, Indiana does, and they seem to be fairly successful in the fact that they actually get U.S. Senate candidates and gubernatorial candidates together. It almost begs the question, Craig, are we even going to have debates since we don't have a debate commission in this state? Are we going to have a gubernatorial or U.S. Senate debate?
I mean, if I had to predict right now, I would say maybe not. I mean, it seems like as of now in Michigan, the question of whether there will be debates is a political question instead of being a question of debates are necessary because they are part of the electoral process. We need to vet our candidates, and we need to see them up on a stage next to each other, debating their ideas, hearing their platforms, hearing what they want to do so voters can compare them. Right now, it's a political issue. If someone like Governor Snyder is up in the race, he really has no incentive, apparently, to take part in a debate, so he just continues, you know, he could just stiff-arm Mark Schauer and say, no, I'm not going to do this. No, I'm not going to do this. And when we saw it in 2012 with Debbie Stabenow and Pete Hoekstra.
She just kept pushing and pushing, and Hoekstra kept pushing, and then Debbie Stabenow just threw up her hands in alleged frustration and say, we can't do it at all. Emily, do you think we're going to have debates?
I'm not convinced. I don't think that it works to anyone's advantage. You know, obviously, Mark Schauer would like to debate and probably has some serious policy differences with Snyder, but you know, like Craig says, what's Snyder's incentive? Like, why should he come to the table? It's not something that he would have to do to win, I don't think. And then conversely, you know, the Peters Land race is, you know, arguably close and competitive, and I don't know who it would benefit more to debate, but Terrylynn Land has just shown an adverse reaction to public appearances in general. I can't imagine that being on stage next to her opponent would be something she'd be willing to engage in.
How about the public interest, though, Jacob? I mean, who would benefit from debates? Well, how about the public? I mean, isn't that, in the end, who should be benefiting from these in the first place? It's not about who can capitalize necessarily the most on these things. It should be about the voters, shouldn't it?
Right. Well, I mean, and I think that's the point I think some have tried to make, is that we have some open seats, you know, an open Senate seat. We have some open congressional seats, which, you know, do not come around very often. You know, we are weeks away from the primary, and some have not held any kind of debate, especially those town hall debates where, you know, people can directly engage. So I think, the campaigns are just too worried about a gaffe that's going to go viral. I mean, I think that there's been horror stories before. I don't know whose fault that's perpetrated, but that's all they're focusing on is what. How can we not screw this up?
And also, I don't know, like he says, a gaffe could go viral and put someone at a disadvantage. I don't think not debating puts you at a disadvantage. I don't know anyone who would withhold their vote for someone because they didn't debate.
And that's the issue right now. I mean, I think the arguments from people when they're talking privately about why there aren't debates are twofold. One, when we have debates, nobody watches them. And two, there's a calculation that the risk of not debating is a smaller risk for some candidates than the risk of actually being on stage and letting their ideas be heard, which is kind of sad, I guess.
Well, I guess that is kind of sad. I mean, that's the world we live in now, though, right? Where you can put out a 4-second Instagram, or you can put out something on Twitter, and then instantly that's what the campaign is known for. That's what the candidate is known for. It's kind of a sad commentary on our political system, isn't it, Emily?
Yeah, you know, I guess to some extent. But you could also argue that voters are getting closer to candidates through social media.
I would not argue that.
But
it's all about controlling the message. I think the way campaigns want to run today is we want to control everything. We want to control the risk. We want to control what we're putting out there. The debate system that some states have, where there are debates and there's a lot of pressure to have debates, the candidates are put in a situation where they have to actually think on their feet and come up with some, you know, real person-to-person views on issues instead of running every statement that they make through their campaign infrastructure and then posting it on Facebook after they believe that it's a win-win for them.
What was the equivalent? So 10 years ago, if you had a genuine question about where Gary Peters was on an issue, there was no Twitter. You couldn't direct message him and maybe he would answer you. So I don't know. I think to some extent that people feel like that is a little bit of a pipeline to candidates that they didn't have before.
I'm going to answer my previous question now. I will predict that there will not be any debates in the traditional sense in the U.S. Senate race. If there are joint appearances between the two, I won't count that as a debate. A joint appearance is a joint appearance. And if it is televised, then folks from the audience can, you know, ask questions of the candidates themselves without the two interacting. Maybe they could do something of that nature. But I don't think we're going to see a debate in a traditional sense between those two. Maybe even a joint appearance maybe we can see as a minor victory. On the governor's race, I could see the governor caving in and doing one debate, maybe on a Sunday night when nobody is watching, like what happened with Bonero. I don't see there being any more than that, if there is any at all, and I wouldn't be surprised if there ends up being zero and the campaigns feign some type of, we tried hard, but in the end it didn't happen. The sad commentary is, I don't think anybody's going to care except maybe us in the media, because we'd like to see these types of hand-to-hand combat as opposed to conflicting commercials. You know, what I've been kind of impressed with here, Craig, is that the candidates in the 8th Congressional District have had some types of debates already. I wish there'd be one in Lansing. I'd be more than happy to moderate it if, you know, the Bishop campaign would like to come on up here. However, this campaign filing deadline that we're going to see how much everybody's raised here on Tuesday is more important to McMillan or Mike Bishop?
I think that's a tough one to call. I would probably actually say Mike Bishop, just because I think the theory going into this was that Mike Bishop was going to have the money advantage, and I don't think anyone expects Tom McMillan to post some huge number. I think if McMillan does get some financial backing, it will come through some independent groups who you won't see on his candidate filing.
This is the most important filing deadline for which candidate in these congressional races?
The 4th CD with Molinar is kind of heating up. Mitchell can post some real numbers and see how much of it is self-financed. I'd be curious.
Well, and I would argue that this is an important one for Molinar, maybe more than Mitchell, because we know Mitchell's got bucks because he's already spent them. Does Molinar have anything in the tank, and is he going to be able to counter what Mitchell has been able to put on the air? You know, when Camp endorsed Mitchell, I think one of the questions that folks had was, well, what does this mean for dollars? You know, is Camp going to be able to help Molinar at all with his campaign? Because obviously we know that Camp's got mad bank, right? Mm-hmm. If he can't do anything to help Molinar, you know, will just the simple endorsement mean a heck of a lot?
I mean, I think that's a fair question to ask about a lot of the endorsements he's gotten from kind of the Midland establishment. You know, how much are they worth? Are people putting their money where their mouths are?
I think it will also be interesting to see in the 3rd District what Brian Ellis does in terms of his financial support. And there are these polls out there that show Justin Amash to apparently have a double-digit lead over Ellis. Is there going to be money there for Ellis in the last few weeks to make a push and try to narrow that gap? He's going to need money to do that. Is it going to be there or not?
I would say this is the most important campaign finance filing deadline for Kerry Benevolio, because we have seen David Trott have commercials up there. He's already defined himself. He's already going on the attack. If you trust their internal polls, it's already switched. It started with Benevolio up. It is now Trott up. And if you just take a look at the ad buys, that would make a heck of a lot of sense that that's the direction things are going. If Kerry Benevolio can't show a lot of money, will these third parties come in? Will they even see an opportunity to keep the seat? Because if Benevolio can't keep any money himself, if he can't raise any money himself, how credible is he going to be in this general election? Would he just be a wasted investment? I find it interesting, though, Craig, when you were doing this debate story, you asked about whether Benevolio and Trott were going to debate. One pulled out. One was in D.C. Is Benevolio even going to be back in the district to campaign? My goodness, this is important.
You know, I'm not clear on that. They said he's going to be in Washington for a few weeks, so I'm not clear on when he's going to come back. But there are pictures on his Facebook page of him campaigning in parades and various things. So
he's got to do something, because if not, he's going to get destroyed. All right, switching gears to another campaign, the Wayne County executive race obviously has the imagination out of folks outside of Southeast Michigan. I think the presumed favorite right now is Warren Evans. For a number of reasons, he's been elected countywide. He doesn't have the stink of scandal hanging over his head. And I don't think there's anyone else who is in the race that would divide up or go after the base that he is going for like the other three.
Thanks for joining me on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Well, I wanted to ask, first of all, how did you get into this race? How did you wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm going to run to be the next Wayne County executive?
Too many negative stories, too many problems with other sorts of things. This has been my whole life, and I just kind of woke up one day and said, enough's enough.
Do you think that Bob Ficano is corrupt?
No, I don't. I would not cast those aspersions. But, I mean, if things are going on in your administration that you don't know about, shame on you. And if things are going on in your administration that you do know about, shame on you. So I think it just turns out to be a shame on you anyway.
What were folks telling you as you were considering doing this?
I don't know that... telling me an awful lot. I mean, there are always people that try to draft you to do things, but for a number of reasons, I tried to keep them as quiet as I could for a while, just because I've been around Wayne County politics for a long time, and you let people know what you're planning to do too quickly, and sometimes the game changes. And so I waited till close to the filing deadline. But I had made up my mind sometime before that.
There's a lot of issues going on in Wayne County. One of the big ones is the jail. How do you think Bob Ficano is handling the jail situation right now?
Well, right now he's handling it as politically as he can. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Kind of face to put a good face on it and make it look good. But the problem is it was a significant blunder in the beginning, it's going to cost the taxpayers of Wayne County an awful lot of money that we don't have. Now we're looking at options, or I should say the administration's looking at options. We're looking at what they tell us, and I don't see a clear answer at this time that explains where the dollars are going to come from and what's going to be the best for the taxpayer.
So are you comfortable continuing on this path that Bob Ficano has got us on with the jail, if elected?
I don't know what the path is, Kyle.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, I'm a former sheriff for two terms. I've been a jail administrator before that. I understand jails. I understand how they work. And I think there were some flaws even from the beginning in terms of the number of beds that were necessary. But now it's just more of a fiscal. How do we finish this? I mean, right now I think I'd probably hold on to the existing jails for a while until we could sort it all out. But there may be a better plan, but I don't have the numbers, and I'm not sure that the current administration has the numbers either.
Obviously, this current administration has had its share of problems. The one prior to it, the feds came in under McNamara. How do you tell voters or reassure voters that you can come in and end this cycle of the Wayne County Executive Office being connected with the word corruption?
Well, the first thing is I've got a 35-year track record that speaks to that. I've been in law enforcement for the majority of that time, either as a prosecutor or a sheriff or as an officer. I've never had anybody close to me in any kind of trouble like that or investigations like that. It's how you conduct, how you lead, keeping your eye on the prize. And so I think that's a big part of it. The other part is just transparency. I mean, the voting public, and rightly so, are dismayed at Wayne County politics. And so having a transparent government, where people know who you're hiring, how much you're paying them, and you're being straightforward with the taxpayers about how we're going to try to get ourselves out of this mess will go a long way to getting the public support back. And you sorely need that, because, you can't fix the problems individually. You have to fix them as a community.
What's your plan to help balance the budget in Wayne County?
Well, there's several things. The first thing starts with a forensic audit that tells us just how bad it is and gives us the reality. The second is to have folks in who can give me a real solid idea of what our options are with respect to underfunded pensions and the structural deficit. But more basic than that is the county has to learn, like everybody in Wayne County knows at home, when you're in tough fiscal times, you stop doing the nice-to-do stuff and you spend most of your time on the must-do stuff. And if the county budget reflected what most citizens know, we wouldn't be in this kind of trouble. There are four other elected officials in the county who have been elected to do a job, and some of them are historically underfunded. The priority is not on the services they provide to the county. The priority has been more on failed jail projects and race courses at the racetracks at the airport and a number of other things. And so a shift in priority is the first thing that, you know, any good manager or leader would do. I mean, let's get to the business of taking care of the taxpayers instead of the business of creating projects.
You know, speaking about projects, obviously in Wayne County there's a perception that those who are close with the executive get the nice peach contracts. How do you reassure businesses out there that under your administration it's going to be a fair process in order to get county money?
Well, first of all, you're going to see a lot more cutting-edge people in the administration who have public service as their driven goal, as opposed to political types who, you know, become good bureaucrats but aren't very good at getting things done, and don't have a focus on trying to get them done economically so that we're, number one, providing the best service, but number two, we're giving county businesses the opportunity, and we're spreading the work around so that those who deserve it have an opportunity to get it. And again, I have a track record of doing that.
Okay. Have you seen this brochure one of your opponents is circulating that has a picture of the mayor on it?
I have, yes.
What's your impression of that? Because it was my impression that the mayor is endorsing you.
That's not an impression. The mayor is endorsing me.
Okay, all right, okay.
But, why an opponent would choose to do that, I think, you know, pretty obvious. They're just kind of grabbing at straws and, you know, want to create an image that's not the appropriate image. I'm not going to waste any time worrying about that. And we're campaigning all day and all night and trying to move forward. I've never been a negative person. I'm not going to start now. We're just trying to do what we need to do to win this race.
It seems like that's a little shady. I mean, is this typical Wayne County politics as usual?
Well, I mean, it's unprofessional bad politics as usual. I don't know that it's necessarily Wayne County. I mean, you've seen that kind of stuff a lot of different places, but it is, to me, misleading.
Do you support a new international trade crossing across the Detroit River?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And, you know, we're looking at proposals, but, I mean, that is probably the biggest boon to industry and growth in this region. There's no doubt in my mind that if there's another bridge, there will be an exponential increase in commerce and trade with Canada, and I think that's something that would just be a tremendous shot in the arm to not only to this community but the state in Ohio and in Canada also.
Have you had an opportunity to talk with or work with Governor Snyder at all?
I have not.
Okay. Are you supporting anyone for governor?
I'm a Democrat, and I'll support the Democrat for governor.
Okay. Do you have a favorite in any of the congressional races?
I do, but I wouldn't tell you who they are.
Why is that?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm friends with an awful lot of people, and, I have my own race to run. I'm not going to get caught in that sort of thing. I'm not an incumbent who's out endorsing. You know, I'm a candidate who's running.
Kind of give me your perception of how this race is transpiring right now, the Wayne County executive race.
So far it's been a hardworking campaign, I think, for all of the candidates. Been doing well in the polls, which is always nice. Better to run from in front than behind, but we're not taking anything for granted. We're going to run and tell and work hard as if we're behind. That's our plan, to do that to the end and to try to get as many voters out as we can.
Now, for our listeners' benefit, this is a little bigger than a state rep race, for example. How do you run a race like this? Is there door knocking involved, calls? How are you approaching this race?
Well, all of the above, but, you know, remember, Kyle, I've run countywide as sheriff two times and been successful with a significant, plurality of the vote, so I'm not an unknown
sure.
commodity in Wayne County. I worked 28 years as a Wayne County employee, many of those in, you know, capacities where I touched the public regularly. And so it's getting out to an awful lot of communities, doing a lot of, I do a lot of canvassing, door knocking, but, you know, you try to predict the areas where you'll be the most effective. You obviously can't do that throughout the entire county, but we're trying not to neglect any community. We're getting out with our volunteers everywhere we can.
Very good. Well, I appreciate your time today. Warren Evans, candidate for Wayne County Executive.
Thanks a lot, Kyle.
Now I'm going to introduce Michael Sargent. He is the executive director of the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee. He's going to be in Detroit in Cobo Hall later this week as the Netroots Conference takes off in the city of Detroit. This is a big organizing tool for Democrats and a pretty big deal among those who get involved in these campaigns. Let's listen to what they're going to be doing this week.
For our readers and listeners who aren't familiar with the DLCC, what can you tell them about your organization?
The DLCC is the Democratic Party organization that works to elect Democratic state legislators across the country. And we've been in existence for 20 years.
What kind of participation do you have with the different states? Does it vary by state, or are all 50 states basically aboard?
All 50 states are aboard. We, you know, the DLCC is a campaign organization. So, you know, we do a lot of work, in particular in the battleground states that chamber control, legislative control is at risk, but the DLCC counts upon strong support and involvement in just about every single state in the country.
So how do you guys have Michigan as far as its possibility of Democrats taking control of the legislature?
Well, you know, we've classified the state of Michigan as an emerging majority. We really, you know, we're excited about our prospects in the Michigan House. Needing to pick up 5 seats to pick up the majority in the House. We gained seats last cycle in 2012, and we think that the Michigan Senate is poised to gain a few seats this cycle, putting us in the strong position for 2018.
Now, how many other states are designated as emerging states?
I think, there's 8 states altogether.
Okay. So it's really we're in kind of a small company here, really.
Yes.
Okay. So what does that mean? I mean, you guys supply money and resources to these various caucuses?
Yes, the DLCC, works strategically with, the Democratic, the legislative operations in, all the states to put together the best winning campaign operation. And then from there, working technically, but also putting needed resources, putting the needed resources into the operations as well financially.
Now, you're going to be at this event this week, Netroots, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
So tell me what role the DLCC will have at this event.
Well, the DLCC is proud to have been, a longtime supporter and sponsor of Netroots Nation. We believe the organization does a good, great job of promoting real public discourse regarding, helping progressives get, more involved into the process. And one of the things that DLCC is doing is that DLCC is participating in a panel regarding redistricting. Mm-hmm. The effort to work to erase the Republican gerrymanders across the country by 2020 is a critical one, and it's one that DLCC is leading the fight. DLCC is leading the fight to do that.
Now, is that by just taking control of more legislators, or is that reforming the process?
That's largely winning back legislative majorities, mm-hmm. working with our legislators and stakeholders and in critical states across the country to figure out what are the best races to target. How do we build the infrastructure necessary to win those chambers and win those individual races, and to do so in a methodical process, starting now. So, you know, we started in 2012 by picking up 8 chambers from the Republicans. And, you know, we feel, you know, we were on a path to be able to make significant gains in 14, 16, 18, and 20.
Usually the cycle of the second term president, midterm election is usually not good for the party of that president in charge. Why do you think that this year could be an exception and Democrats could do well?
Well, I think a large part of it has to do with the fact that, you know, Republicans in the governor's mansions, Republicans in legislatures have so greatly overreached and have governed in a very, you know, extremist fashion in the past 4 years. And, you know, we see that in a state like Michigan. The Republicans have governed in a way that is out of step with the values of Michigan. When we take a look at the rolling back and the attacks on women's health, when I see the laws on regarding right to work and infringing upon people's rights to collectively bargain, those aren't Michigan values. And when I look at that, I see that those kind of opportunities are not only in Michigan, but they're in lots of different states across the country.
Is there any regional trends that you're seeing as far as where Democrats are doing better than they have in the past or not doing as well as they have in the past?
Well, I think Democrats, I think that we're making gains in the Midwest again. We saw that last cycle with, retaking the Minnesota legislature and making gains, in Michigan, picking up seats in Michigan. Making gains in Iowa, holding a chamber, gaining in the other chamber. But we're also excited about our opportunities in the Southwest. So I think we've been making good gains and making good progress in the Southwest.
Very good. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. I'm not going to tell you how many cuts we had in this particular edition of MERS Monday, but let's just say that if I didn't cut anything out, this podcast would still be going on for some time.
We need a blooper reel.
Well,
the director's cut.
maybe we can do like what Skubik does, and we can have like... off the record.
The overtime.
I don't know if we'd want to do overtime.
No, unfortunately, I think the overtime is just when you're compiling the podcast and showing us all the good parts in the office.
Maybe we can do penalty kicks instead. Instead of overtime, we can do penalty
extra
kicks.
Time. World Cup.
Injury time. Maybe that's more like it. All right. With a special thanks to the Michigan Press Association for distributing this far and wide. And thanks to Warren Evans and Craig, Emily, and Jacob. Until next week, I'm Kyle Mullen. Take care.